Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Go. Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
You do what's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Yeah, this is Jeff Palermo from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, along with Todd Horn and Glenn Gilbo. Thanks for joining us. Hour number two of Tiger Rag Radio. Don't forget, you can catch the show on YouTube or wherever you get your favorite podcast. Just look for Tiger Rag Radio. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, we will talk with Glenn West of 247 Sports. But now we talk a little women's basketball as we break away from the football talk, as the Lady Tigers, Coach Kim Mulkey's team, is a perfect 10-0. And in nine of those games, they have scored 100 points or more. Now, who they did it against is not necessarily a very difficult slate of competition, but you got to give them credit. You score 100 points in 9 out of 10 games you played. That is saying something. And we bring in Reed Darcy, who covers LSU women's basketball for the Advocate. So, Reed, how does this translate to once they finally get into SEC play? I mean, how much of a juggernaut is this team, or is the competition been so low here? It's really tough to gauge.
It is very tough to gauge. It's tough to know for sure. But I think if you look at the past results and compare them to previous teams, you know, Kim Mulkey has always had a pretty light non-conference schedule since she's been at LSU. And, you know, for what it's worth, this team is dominating just a little bit more than they usually have in years past. They're scoring at a much higher rate. They're shooting at a much higher percentage. They're winning by larger margins. So I think that tells us that they're maybe a little bit better than some of those other teams. I don't know. It's tough to put some stock into overall the 15 or whatever games they play. I think you should really look at that game against Duke and really try to see exactly what this team is, because I think what we learned that night when they played Duke is that, yeah, the offense is legit. They're one of the best offensive teams in the country. Duke always has a good defense under Kara Lawson, and they really played well offensively. So I think all the offense, you know, all the numbers, 100 points, it shows us that the offense is legit. They're definitely one of the best in the country, maybe even the best.
Reed, you talked about the Duke game, and LSU fell behind 14-1 to a Duke team that had three losses coming in. If I'm not mistaken, it was three losses coming in and had not been playing well. And then they fell behind as far as 17-3 before they finally erupted. Was that Malaysia Fulwalla coming off the bench, or what happened? How did they finally wake up, and why were they asleep at the beginning?
It was definitely Fulwalla. She definitely came in and gave them a spark and really woke them up, I would say. You know, the reason why they got off to such a slow start, I think, you know, in the macro, you look at it, they probably needed a few minutes to adjust to Duke's size and skill and athleticism, because they haven't played a team like that all year. So I'd imagine it took a few possessions there to get accustomed to that, get used to that, get a feel for it. But if you just look at it on offense, they committed a lot of turnovers. There was a lot of careless mistakes. You know, Flashe dribbled the ball off her foot one time. Michaela Williams failed to pass out of bounds. Just overall sloppiness on offense. I believe they turned the ball over on 6 of their first 9 possessions. And then on defense, they weren't sharp in their rotations. They weren't getting back in transition. Those issues kind of appeared a little bit throughout the game, but they were really glaring, especially at the start of the first quarter. They fixed them. They cleaned them up. They got back into the game. A lot of it has to do, I think, with, you know, on offense, they just played a lot sharper they started taking care of the ball a lot better, and that allowed them to run their offense and score their points the way they have all season. So, you know, what you learned is that, you know, they are this great offensive team, but I think they're also pretty resilient because they went on the road in, you know, kind of a difficult environment and fell down by 14 points early, took a big punch, and then responded right back. So that's a sign of a team that has quite a bit of competitive maturity on it, I would say.
So what are your big questions on this team at this stage, given who they've played, how badly they've beaten them, the fact that they're ranked now number two in the net rankings? They've scored more points than any other team has scored. I mean, you know, 9 of the 10 with 100-plus points, but even against Duke, they scored over 90. If I'm not mistaken, that's the only team that's ever scored that much through the first 10 games. What's the biggest – is it Full Wiley that's the biggest, I guess, you know, news? Or is it Kate Koval? Or is it the front line? What's the big thing that you're seeing right now?
The big thing that I'm seeing is just how well the pieces fit. All the new pieces seem to fit alongside each other really well. And that really hasn't been the case the past couple of years when, you know, they've had some trouble trying to figure out their point guard situation. They've had some undersized post players kind of playing a little bit out of position. They have to compensate for that quite a bit. It seems like to me that this team, all the pieces, the eight newcomers combined with the four or five returners, they all fit pretty well together. Jada Richard, I think, is playing really well at point guard, giving Kim Mulkey exactly what she needs. You know, you don't need a ton of offense from her, but you just need her to take care of the ball and keep the offense moving. And then when you look at combine her with Kate Koval, who's playing really well on the interior, she's 6'5" and really strong, and that's not something that LSU really had last year. So combining them and then Full Wiley able to come off the bench and do my leisure Full Wiley things, I think it's all come together into this awesome, really just productive group of players. Now, the questions I might have is, how exactly good are they on the defensive end of the floor? I'm not so sure. You know, Duke is not a very good offensive team, and they had one of their better offensive showings against LSU for what that's worth. And we haven't really seen any other kind of team that could test LSU defensively. So I'll look to see once, you know, SEC play starts, how well are they playing defensively? Can they meet Kim Mulkey's standards? And can that become another strength of theirs in addition to their offense?
Is there, Reed, any word on when Caitlin Gilbert's going to be back?
No, we do not know. We know she's away from the team for personal reasons. We do not know when she will be back. We should get some kind of update from Kim Mulkey. We're talking to her on Thursday ahead of their game against Louisiana Tech on Saturday, so maybe we'll get an update from her then.
Is that a negative right now for the team, just the fact that she's not there?
I actually, you know, think you can kind of spin it into a positive, because some of their younger players are getting more minutes than they would have gotten otherwise. You know, Bella Hines, Devine Burridge, those players maybe have a little more room in the rotation, more time to see the floor. Then Bella Hines got in a little bit against Duke. Maybe if Caitlin Gilbert were with the team and playing, maybe she wouldn't have gotten onto the floor and gotten that good experience so that she can use to help contribute to the team once January and February rolls around.
Hey, Reed, going into the season, Kim Mulkey kind of talked about losing Anissa Morrow and how she didn't have, you know, that one player that could just kind of dominate the stat sheet like she did. But she said that the team would have to play, you know, collectively down low. And what have you seen from those post players thus far? And do you think they're effectively replacing her production effectively?
I do, yeah. They're actually grabbing more rebounds per game than they did at this point last year. I think last year in the non-conference they were, you know, pulling down 47, 48 rebounds per game. This year it's just a tick over 50, 52 or something like that. So they're actually rebounding the ball a little bit better against their non-conference competition than they did last year when they had Anissa Morrow. So that's pretty impressive to me, and it's not really one player who's taken it upon themselves to handle all of the rebounding duties like Anissa Mora did. I think the leading rebounder is Koval, and she's only averaging about 7.5 rebounds a game. It really has been a collective effort. All the guards have rebounded really well, from Flage and Michaela to some of the younger ones like Bella Hines and those players there. So it really has been a collective. They are rebounding just fine. I thought it might have been a small issue that they had to deal with this year, but through the first 10 games or so, it has not been a problem whatsoever. In fact, it's looked a little bit better than it did last year, which is pretty impressive.
Reed, do you think that when SEC play starts in January, obviously some of these players are going to have reduced playing time. She's going to narrow it down to, what, probably 8 or 9, knowing the way she usually does that are in a rotation. And is Grace Knox going to be able to sustain as a freshman?
Yes, I do. I definitely think Grace Knox will be in that rotation of 8 or 9. She's playing really well. She's been super efficient around the rim. She's defending really well as well. Kim Mulkey said after we talked to her after they beat UNO on Sunday, she said she thought Sakaya Johnson, she said she thought things were moving a little bit too fast for her against Duke, and so she didn't play as much against Duke than maybe we would have thought she would. But I think those two freshmen are definitely going to be in that rotation of 8 or 9 with Knox coming off the bench. She's just too good of a defender and a rebounder, and LSU really needs that kind of player on the inside, especially when you factor in what she can do in transition as well. So I think in the past, Mulkey really has gone after maybe 7 or 8 in her rotation. It's kind of been pretty small, pretty tight. This year, I'm expecting it to be a little bit looser, a little bit bigger. Maybe she has 8, 9. Maybe you can even squeeze in a 10th there. It all depends how the games go, but I really do think that this team is a lot deeper than it has been in years past, and she's got, just more weapons at her disposal. I think, you know, there's just a lot of talent on this team, and she's really using these first 15 games of the season to figure out exactly what she has and find exactly what this team is capable of, and I think she's pretty pleased with the results so far.
Have you had a chance to really scope out some of the other teams in the SEC and sort of gauge them and compare them to LSU? And if so, where do you think LSU's falling really truthfully in the conference right now, in the conference race?
So right now I would say that LSU is the third best team in the conference, just because we haven't seen them play the level of competition that Texas and South Carolina is playing. Those three teams, I look at them pretty similarly. South Carolina this year, if you look at their starting five, they probably have the best starting five or one of the best starting fives top to bottom in the country. You know, there are really no weak points there. They're really good. But, you know, the Dawn Staley teams, they're usually like come at you in waves where they bring off, you know, 4 or 5 players off the bench and there's no drop off. This year, I think they might have a bit of trouble doing the same thing. It doesn't look like they have quite the depth that they have in years past. So LSU might be able to, you know, make a run at them this year. I think Texas is off to a really good start. They've arguably have the best resume so far in the country. They beat UCLA and South Carolina, which is really impressive. They're one of the best defensive teams in the country. They're playing really well, and their point guard, Rory Harmon, she tore her ACL 2 years ago. She came back last year, but now it looks like she's fully back to what she was before, and that's a dangerous site for all the rest of the SEC teams that have to deal with there. It's really those three teams at the top of the conference. I wouldn't be surprised if any of them won the conference, but I think we'll look towards January and February to see exactly which one is the best and who's going to come out of it on top, I think.
Reed, thanks a lot for your time, man. We really appreciate it. Look forward to your coverage, along with the Tiger Rags coverage of the LSU's game against Louisiana Tech on Saturday in the Smoothie King Center. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Talk to you guys later.
All right. Reed Darcy from The Advocate talking about the Lady Tigers 10-0. They'll be taking on Louisiana Tech at the Smoothie King Center Saturday at 5 o'clock. Just 4 more non-conference games and then finally get into the nuts and bolts of this thing when they open up the SEC season on January 1st at home against Kentucky. We'll be back after this here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Jeff Palermo, along with Todd Horn and Glenn Gilbo. And again, if you're just joining us late here on Tiger Rag Radio, you can always re-listen, re-watch previous shows either on YouTube. Check out Tiger Rag's YouTube channel or wherever you find your favorite podcast. You can download and subscribe to get the latest edition of Tiger Rag Radio. Hey, a doubleheader inside
the... Well, I'm sorry, Jeff. All the past shows are also available on TigerRag.com.
That is true. So. That is true. Yeah, you can go back to August and hear us talk about how LSU football is going to be in the college football playoffs and hear how Jeff, stupid we were.
Jeff, you're fired.
Well, we were.
But not with cause. Oh, yeah, with cause. Oh, without cause. Oh, wait, I don't know. I'll just say both in the same sentence.
Actually, I don't have the authority to fire you.
Yeah. Oh, boy, those were the days, weren't they? we'll get back into a little more football talk here in a second. But since we're on the hoops, since we're talking a little hoops, a men and women doubleheader in the Smoothie King Center. LSU taking on Lady Texers, which is an interesting matchup by name only, right? Because we know where Kim Mulkey, where she played, where she was an assistant coach, where she left a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. We now know it's not the greatest relationship between her and her alma mater. And then you have an LSU men's basketball team that, boy, they got punched in the face against Texas Tech, and they never really responded. A disappointing game in Fort Worth, but they got a chance to make up for it on Saturday in the Smoothie King Center when they take on an ACC opponent in SMU.
So what's the capacity crowd at the Smoothie King Center, roughly? I mean,
I think they can punch. I think they can get 16,000-17,000 in there if they wanted to.
And the women play first. I predict, based on what happened with the men at Texas Tech, that the women outdraw the men's game. I think there'll be more people at the women's game than there will be at the men's game, even though it's a very important game for the men. Arguably way more important than it is for the women. I still think the women will outdraw the men.
Well, for one, I also agree with you. And the capacity at the Smoothie King Center is 17,791. Now, there's going to be more fans for that women's game than there has been all year for the Pelicans games.
And the Pelicans are 3-22, right?
That is correct. So New Orleans should probably show out because this is the only good basketball they're going
to
see.
Yeah, and it's an interesting night to have the game. And I think the men are going to have a decent crowd because it's at 7:30. And, you know, there's no college football on TV this Saturday night for the first time in a while. So,
and it's an important game for them.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a Saturday night in December in New Orleans. You'll have some people out and go to the game, I think. I think both teams will draw well.
I also think they're going to draw a crowd from those who may be staying in for whether that's the Saints game on Sunday or whether that's the state championship playoffs that are going on this weekend. It is a big weekend in New Orleans. It's going to be crowded over there.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be difficult because I think St. Augustine might be playing at about the time the LSU men play. Yeah. So it's going to be a traffic nightmare there.
The St. Augustine car game's at 3:30. There's only two games on Saturday because the LHSA has to get out of the dome to allow the NFL to – the NFL needs like 24 hours. Well, they request 24 hours, but they can't get 24 hours this time around. But anyways, you see what I'm saying. They got to get ready for the Saints game the next day. But what happened against Texas Tech?
Yeah, that really surprised me because
you know, I didn't think they were, you know, I wasn't surprised that they lost, but I was surprised at how they were never really in the game. And, you know, DJ, Deedon Thomas, was really trapped and just was not himself in that game. And that really shocked me. And that kind of set the tone for the rest of the team. And they were just never in the game. I didn't see that coming.
There's this feeling that it's, even though it's one game, same old, same old. They got a chance to, again, that's why this game against SMU is important, because they, and frankly, I got to be honest with you, I don't know how good SMU is. I just know they're in a Power Four conference, and they've had decent teams in the past.
I watched SMU play Saturday against Texas A&M. And they're a solid basketball team. And my opinion of this LSU men's basketball team really doesn't change much, and I'll tell you why. I think they're physically suited to really compete this year. And I think if they were to play Texas Tech 10 or 9 more times, they would beat them a few times, and it would be a much closer game. I mean, Texas Tech basically took advantage of what LSU was doing against them, and that was trying to stop that all-star center that they have, and they were double-teaming him, which means they were leaving him open on the outside. And Texas Tech just made them pay. They hit 8 of their 9 first three-pointers, and they had a 27-point advantage from the three-point line. LSU just couldn't shoot. Thomas, like Glenn said, couldn't do anything. But Eddie Sutton used to say, the former Arkansas and Kentucky coach, that you're going to play 5 games a year that you just aren't any good, well below yourself. You're going to play 5 games a year where you're much better than yourself, and the rest of the time you're going to be yourself. I think this was one of the games where LSU played much less than themselves, and I don't think it's going to be that way against SMU or moving forward. Maybe,
well,
4 more times.
Eddie should know, because he lost by 40 to LSU in Rupp Arena.
All right, let's take a break. Glenn West from 247 Sports joins us here on Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back inside the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, Jeff Palermo along with Glenn Gilbo and Tiger and Todd Horn of Tiger Rag. And let's bring in our next guest here on the show, and that is Glenn West from 247 Sports. Glenn, happy holidays. How are you doing tonight?
We do not have Glenn West as of right now.
Oh, we're still efforting Glenn West as it is at the moment. So, okay. All right. Well,
we're going to discuss the basketball team and LSU's recruiting class. So why don't we talk about the LSU signing day last week, Andre, as we try to get Glenn. Todd, what did you think of the class as far as, you know, you were talking earlier, that was an awesome stat by Andre and by Luke, the rating per player, because they didn't have a lot of signees, they just had 14, but they were all really good, and they had that number one ranking.
Yeah, that's why I said earlier when we were talking about it, I think it was quality over quantity, and I really believe what was happening here is that, you know, I think, you know, Lane Kiffin has proven that he and his staff know how to evaluate their roster as a whole, what they're looking for. So I think he's looked at the entire current LSU roster. I think that he has looked at who they were recruiting, and I think he's got an eye on what's going to happen in the portal. And they know exactly not only who they want to invite from the portal, who they wanted to recruit, and who they want to retain on the LSU roster, and then how they want to spend that revenue share dollar and those NIL dollars that they're going to have. And he's going to have up to $25 million guaranteed by LSU. That was part of his contract agreement from NIL. And I think that that's what you saw going on here, and they're really going to build that roster the way that they wanted to, not the way that the previous staff had done it. And I think that was a lot of what was going on with that recruiting. I think they could have brought in 25 players if they wanted to, which would have been a normal recruiting class size for LSU in terms of quantity. But they were going for quality over quantity with a longer-term picture towards January 2nd. And we've already seen some attrition on the LSU, current LSU roster, and I don't think that they've lost anybody except Ahmad Bro that they would like to have, and I'm not even sure about that.
Ahmad is going to play in the bowl game, he said. Let me ask you, Todd and Jeff, you know, Lane is busy with the portal and busy getting ready for the class in February. And he's looking at his team, and I don't understand why not coach the team in the bowl practices, or if not actually coach them and do what you usually do for a game, just be there to watch the players, and why not coach the team in the bowl, you know, just as a dress rehearsal type thing. You know, I don't really get that. What do you think of that?
I personally like it, okay, and I understand what you're saying, but I think that, especially in today's, we've talked about this in the past, this is a transactional sport now. And I think he wants a clean break. This is this year's team. He starts, like it said at his introductory press conference, 2026. His number on his jersey, the Kiffin jersey, was 26. That's where his focus is, and that's where he wants the break. He doesn't want to be, and I'm putting words in his mouth here, but my sense is he doesn't want to be associated with the 2025 LSU Tigers.
Yeah, and I understood that when Kelly came in, because you remember they had mass exodus of players in the portal. You're not seeing that this time. And I thought Kelly didn't coach that bowl because I thought he might be embarrassed. He was afraid he might be embarrassed, which they almost were, if you remember that bowl.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just thought Kiffin might – want to, you know, just check out the bowl, check out the players. But, you know, chances are it's going to be such a dramatically different roster.
Let me put another spin on it. How would you like, if you're an offensive guru, okay?
Yeah, right.
And that's your reputation, and that's you're a savant, offensive savant. How would you like to have to coach that offense
in
the Texas Bowl?
Yeah, and it would take a lot of game planning, and who knows, and it would be wasted time because he's geared toward the portal and recruiting.
Well, that not only that, I mean, if it was, let's say if it was the situation where you had between Jaden Daniels and Garrett Nussmeier, right, and the one reason why that bowl was so interesting when they played Wisconsin in that, what was that? Was that in Tampa, Orlando, one of those?
That was the Texas Bowl. Wasn't it the Texas Bowl?
No, Wisconsin was in Florida.
Yeah, Wisconsin was in Florida. But the intrigue about that the intrigue about that was finally Garrett Nussmeier gets a chance to start, and it's a preview to what the next season will be.
Oh, right, right.
And here we all know Michael Van Buren is not going to be the starting quarterback in 2026. So it's not even like he can – if Lane was hands-on with this team, it's not even like he's grooming his next quarterback. And I kind of agree with – it's just a weird situation all around.
You agree with Todd? Is that what you were about
to say? I am I 2025 is wrapping up here soon, and I'd finally agree with you this year, Todd.
Good. So let's put that on the shelf. Okay.
I'm going to make sure I cut that tonight.
Well, but I mean, it's not like you're any different, Jeff. Who else agrees with Todd? I mean, I don't know. I don't know anybody else that agrees with him.
I might agree with Todd here.
I don't know.
But I'm talking about the rest of 2025. I'm trying to think of anybody that agreed with him.
Yeah, like when I told y'all early on that if Brian Kelly didn't win, you know, into the college football playoffs, he was going to get fired, and everybody laughed at me.
Well, like, you said he was going to get fired last year. So if you kept saying it year by year, 1 year you're going to be right.
I said last year he was going to get fired this year.
No, you said he was going to get fired last year.
Last year I said he was going to get fired this year.
Yeah, last year.
No, this year.
I disagree.
All right. Go ahead. I would have told you at halftime of the Texas A&M game, Brian Kelly would be fired, I don't know if you would have agreed with me.
Because I didn't think they were going to fire him that quickly.
Yeah.
I really thought I thought that was it. I thought that was his death nail. I did.
But they were leading at halftime is what Jeff was saying.
Oh, at halftime. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I got a question for you guys. You were talking about the $25 million that's guaranteed. 90-plus million here for Lane Kiffin. We don't know exactly yet how much all the assistant coaches are. The buyout, where is all this money coming from, guys?
It's obviously coming from it's going to have to come from the donors. I mean, the LSU, in the last I think it was in the last issue of Tiger Rag, or maybe it was on TigerRag.com, I broke down that the Tiger Athletic Foundation, Scott Woodward, drained it of its funds, and they have a lot of long-term debt bond coming up, so they need an injection of cash to handle all this, and they don't seem worried about it, so they must obviously have commitments from their donors to get it. And in fact, I saw today where ticket sales were up 15%,
right? Yeah.
And also that donations were up significantly since Lane Kiffin had been hired.
And they decided not to raise ticket prices. You saw that? They drew that back.
Right.
It's interesting because the belief was LSU doesn't have the type of rich donors as A&M or some of the other schools, but it...
Well, I don't think they have as much depth of donors as they do at A&M, but I think they have some pretty deep pockets with a handful.
But they're in.
It's kind of like the 2025 recruiting class for LSU football. Not a lot of recruits, but the ones they got are pretty good. Let's take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was the life for me. Home of the LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn. Before we get out of here tonight, our thoughts and prayers are with the Kevin Falk family. Back in 2021, he lost one of his daughters, an unexpected death, and it has happened again to another one of his daughters who died unexpectedly on Saturday. To have it happen once, but now to have it happen a second time, that is heartbreaking for something like that to happen. But
my goodness, what happened?
Well, apparently the Advocate is reporting that his 30-year-old daughter, Letitia, died unexpectedly Saturday at a hospital in Lafayette. Now, there's been no details on her death. Foul play is not suspected or anything like that. So, but if you remember, it was Tanisha Falk, Kevon Falk, who was actually a student worker for LSU's football program at the time, back in September of 2021. She died when she was 19. So now... Letitia Falk, at the age of 30, has died. So, my goodness, that is just heartbreaking for the Falk family. So, wanted to say that we're certainly thinking about them, and that's just very sad, very, very sad stuff there. We wanted to get to the soundbite here before we got out of here. This was Frank Wilson when asked, I think you have it, Andre/Luke, I think you got it on Frank Wilson talking about whether he'll be still on the staff following the Texas Bowl. If you can play that soundbite, Andre.
We just want to finish what we've started with this football team, with the team of 2025. Give them our undivided attention before transition happens. And so until then, nothing will necessarily happen in that regard.
So that's a little bit of what Coach Wilson had to say today. But you guys feel... Am I right on this, Todd, that you feel like he still will be part of the staff?
You know what? I really don't know. Last week, based on what we had heard, I thought he would be. Right now, I can't say I'm as confident in that. But I will say this. If, for whatever reason, whether Kevin Smith from Ole Miss comes to coach the running backs and that blocks out Frank Wilson from the staff and Kiffin's plans, they need to get somebody in here who's got a pipeline to New Orleans.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest fear. They just don't want to see and I'm talking about they, LSU fans, don't want to see another Corey Raymond situation where you let an assistant go and you lose your guy that brings in top-notch defensive backs. Here it would be to bring in the best of the best out of the New Orleans area.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, though, those kingpin recruiters, they're not quite as significant as they were pre-NIL, you know, because the relationships aren't as big. They're still big, though. And, you know, some New Orleans media I know, they're convinced that Frank is staying because of his connections, particularly with Edna Carr High and other major programs in New Orleans. And I don't think they have another guy on staff with any really New Orleans contacts. Who's the other one?
Well, I'm not saying it has New Orleans contacts, but I believe that, and we hadn't even talked about this at all, which is amazing to me, that when Kiffin retained Blake Baker over this weekend, I think that was a significant injection of Louisiana recruiting because Baker's got a great reputation from recruit and knows the state. And like you said, Jeff, he retains Corey Raymond, who's very important not just to the defensive backfield but also to recruiting the state. So it's not as bad as when Brian Kelly came in here and eliminated everybody and had absolutely nothing other than Frank Wilson to rebuild that pipeline.
That was not really. I mean, they had 2 500 seasons. They needed a change, and I don't think Kelly was wrong in getting rid of everybody. It's that he didn't replace them with good people was the main problem.
Well, he did bring in Frank right away.
Yeah, that was a good move, you know. But there's a lot of coaches that were at LSU and other support personnel that it was time to go. But
so you agreed with the Corey?
No, Raymond not with Corey. I didn't agree with that part. But some of the other wholesale changes needed to happen. But if you're going to make changes, you got to make sure you bring in guys just as good or better. And that's what he didn't do. I think that was one of the main reasons he failed. This was a little later. He should have tried harder to keep Mike Denbrock and replaced him better when he lost him.
Austin Thomas gone, you guys think?
Yes. Well, if he stays, it's not going to be the previous job he had because Lane really likes Glasscock, who he has. And you know, it's funny. He's got that running back coach at Ole Miss that he hadn't brought over.
Kevin Smith.
Right, Kevin Smith. And yet he hasn't told Frank that you're staying. So it's like, it's like he hasn't done either one. So maybe he really just hasn't made up his mind.
All right. Lane Kiffin not making up his mind? I think we've heard it.
I think he doesn't have his answers yet. I think he's waiting. I think he prefers Kevin Smith as a running backs coach, and he doesn't have an answer from Kevin Smith yet.
Oh, maybe that's it. Right, right. Well, yeah,
that could be it. That's a good
and,
point.
And, you know, there's really not that much of a hurry. I mean, they got time to pick the right people.
Yeah, no, it's important stuff. All right, let's take a break. One more break to go, and then we'll wrap it up after this here from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.
For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
All right, time for our two-minute offense here on Tiger Rag Radios. We do have Glenn West from 247 Sports joining us here, and we literally got about three and a half minutes here with you, Glenn, so let's get right to it. How many quarterbacks does Lane Kiffin sign in the transfer portal class, do you think?
I think he signs two. I think they aim for three. I think they sign two.
All right, so give me some names.
Okay. I think Sam Levette is a name that you should be keeping an eye on if you're LSU fans. You know, he's got a pretty long road to recovery from a Les Frank surgery, but he's one that we're hearing right now could be a possibility for LSU. Excuse me, come January 2nd, he's dealing with a little bit of a foot injury, but Sam Levette would be one. I'm a big fan of C.J. Bailey. I love the NC State quarterback, and if he enters the portal, I would certainly be making a call to him as well. Don't know how realistic that one is, but he fits all the, you know, the markers for, you know, a quarterback in a Lane Kiffin system with the mobility and certainly the passing ability as well.
What's going on with Colin Hurley?
Yeah, Hurley has left the program. He's been out for really over a month now. I don't expect him to be back. I would expect in the next several days to weeks we hear that he has decided to enter the transfer portal. So, really, Michael Van Buren is the one guy that I think would come back to LSU if given that opportunity. So you could be very realistically be looking at two or three quarterbacks that LSU has to try to get out of the portal here in this next cycle.
All right. Is there any chance Lenora Sellers leaves South Carolina?
That's a very interesting name. I think he'd fit that system. He'd fit the Kiffin system really, really well. I haven't heard of any buzz of Sellers to LSU, but he's certainly somebody that I would be tracking if he does enter the portal. He's got a lot of talent and a lot of athletic ability.
Hey, Glenn. Hey,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Trinidad Chambliss, do you think they have a chance to get him if he does get his senior year back?
Oh, if he gets that extra waiver, and yes, I would absolutely think so. I think just from what I've been hearing and some of the conversations that I've had, you know, that waiver is still very much a coin toss right now if he actually does get it. But if he does get it, I mean, that just makes all the sense in the world if he gets that extra year to come here, play for another year under Kiffin, and really get some magic going here with the LSU offense. I think that makes a lot of sense.
LSU's offensive backfield next year is going to have Harlan Berry, Caden Durham, and Kewan Lacy of Ole Miss?
Yes. Yeah, I think that would be the ideal scenario there. If Lacy was to enter the portal, he'd be somebody I'd be circling in red Sharpie and wanting to get back into the system, into that Lane Kiffin system. So, yes, I would absolutely be going all in on Kewan Lacy if he's in there, and certainly some other options there at receiver that I think LSU could potentially get in the mix for as well.
Too many ifs. I'm asking you for real. No ifs.
All right. I'll get that crystal ball for you next week for sure. Yeah.
Watch Trinidad and
they got an option.
Trinidad and Kewan are going to be on the plane back with those five coaches.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Very good point, Glenn. Yes. I owe y'all a couple segments next week. That's totally my fault.
Actually, this was our best segment of the show. I don't know what you're talking about.
It got off the rails. It's very short, quick answers, right? Yeah.
All right, till next week when we might have Glenn back on. We want to thank everyone for listening. Again, check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can check us out on YouTube. For Andre, Glenn, Gilbo, Todd Horn, I'm Jeff Palermo. This has been Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tiger Rag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.